Hi, my name is Janelle Engelstad, and welcome to the MAP Radio Hour, a Make Art with Purpose podcast. The MAP Radio Hour includes conversations with creatives, scientists, and other people addressing the intersection of cultural, political, and environmental concerns. You can find out more about MAP and our projects at makeartwithpurpose.net. Today's episode features Sarah Kaler, a graduate student in statistics at Colorado State University. Sarah is currently conducting research in environmental epidemiology and has studied dance in Sri Lanka, all of which we touch upon in our conversation, which also features bits of music from Sri Lanka. This is Janelle Engelstad, and I'm sitting with Sarah Kaler, and we're in Santa Clara, California, where we have just completed a conference put on by the State Department called Intersections, Climate Change, Global Affairs, and the Digital Age. And it was very inspiring and brought together 40 alumni who have all participated in State Department exchange programs. And I grew interested in Sarah's work when she talked a little bit about it in the introductions. And so I invited her to talk a little bit today on the MAP Radio Hour. So welcome.
Thanks.
Thanks for being here. So yes, this conference was very inspiring. And I think one of the things that I appreciated about the conference is it brought so many of us together across different sectors. So we had people working in hard sciences, people working in policy, people working in academia, and then myself, who sort of works at this intersection of arts and social and environmental themes. And it really contributed to rich conversations, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. Something I found very inspiring about the conference was the emphasis on communication between these different types of people. Because in my field, I often find that people are terrified of data.
Yeah.
And they're terrified of talking about things that they view as very hard science. And vice versa, statisticians don't always see the importance of talking about things like social sciences and arts. And if we can learn to communicate these ideas to each other better, hopefully we can learn to communicate them to a broader audience better. So I really like the emphasis on that in the conference.
So let's talk for a minute about your work. I know you're writing a software package in R.
Yes.
So tell me about that, because that's something I don't know anything about.
Well, I'm working with an environmental epidemiologist, and my own training is in statistics for the time being. That's rather recent, but my background is in anthropology, actually. Uh-huh. So I find this epidemiology work pretty fascinating. And the software we're writing is to simulate air pollution and health outcome data that has seasonal trends in it. Because in the world, we find that things like particulate matter has a seasonal, trend to it, where it's higher in some parts of the year and lower in other parts of the year. This is going to affect how we predict health outcomes related to this air pollution. So our software will generate data that has seasonal trends, and then it will make statistical models to relate air pollution to health outcomes. So that can be really anything the user wants to specify, but things like hospital admissions for cardiovascular disease, mortality, any other sort of health measure that you can think of. So it'll fit the models, and then it will assess them with some different statistical measures that are hopefully not too obscure for most scientists to deal with.
Do you ever see this kind of software like being designed for an application that maybe people could use to measure air quality in their communities? I wonder if that's something, one way we might think about connecting people to pollution and CO2 levels if you could have an app that you made. I wonder, but then your phone would have to act as some sort of
statistical
device. And some sort of measuring device too. But of course phones do that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true. And it would be great if people could, if there was some app where people can be collecting this data and, you know, sending it in somehow eventually. But where I see the impact of this maybe perhaps most directly would be in things like disaster preparation.
Oh.
So the better models that we have to predict these health outcomes, the better, you know, hospitals can know what resources they're going to need for, you know, either just normal seasonal health effects or for disasters. So things like heat waves.
Right.
How many people are going to pass away a couple weeks early because there was a heat wave? And what can communities do to be prepared for that? So it's a lot of the sort of preparation piece, I think, that will help. And maybe eventually that could be extended to just way in the future using this type of thing on their individual devices. But right now the software is intended for academics, albeit academics who are not statisticians, or who are statisticians, but we're trying to make it accessible for those who are not. But then I think if I added in more graphics, more digestible visualizations, I think that could be really helpful for institutions to use and understand it.
What I found interesting about the work was, for me, even someone who's aware of climate change, who thinks about it, who's developing a project to address some issues connected to climate change, there's still this distance between this thing out there that we know is happening.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember if it was you I was talking to, but I was just in Seattle a couple weeks ago, and I do this regular walk that I've done since I was a child, because I still go back to my childhood home, and we live close, our home is close to a beach in Puget Sound, and I could actually see the impact of climate in the trees. Was it you I was talking
about?
No, okay. So, you know, this is an area that's rich in evergreens, rich in ferns, it's a temperate rainforest. That region of the world is the only temperate rainforest in the world. It stretches from northern Oregon up through Alaska. And so while this isn't an old-growth rainforest, you know, old-growth forest I was walking through, there's trees that are over 100 years old, and, you know, this is this kind of nature path, and it's heavily wooded. The homes sit in these woods, it wasn't from lack of rain, because, you know, the rainfall's lessening.
Right.
But it wasn't that these plants were starved of water. I really got it. I saw it. I thought, wow, it's because of this degree, whatever it is, this 1 degree rise, whatever it's been, or 2 degree rise. It's like the trees' posture weren't these great, grand trees. They were just kind of sagging or, like, drooping.
Yeah.
And the leaves on the deciduous trees were even, you know, just, like, not healthy.
Yeah.
And I had noticed it before, but really attributed it, that kind of feeling and the energy of the trees and everything, to a lack of rainfall. But I really got this time that it's not that, it's the rising temperatures. And I thought, wow, how are they going to survive? They're not.
Right.
And that really had an impact on me.
Yeah.
So there's the story.
I feel that too. I feel that distance because right now I'm in academia and everybody I work with is in academia and we all acknowledge and are very serious about climate change, but sometimes it can be hard to see the real effects that are actually out there and that other people see. And so I think it's very important to get people with stories like that to come together with scientists and with artists, and really the only way to communicate this is through all of these different means, because all of the means speak to different people.
You did was it a Fulbright you did?
Yes.
In Sri Lanka?
Yes.
Studying traditional dance.
Yes. Yep, studying traditional Sri Lankan dance.
So so you must have been, like, trained as a dancer when you were a child, and
yes.
did you do ballet or contemporary? Or?
Yep. So I grew up doing ballet my whole life.
Okay.
And also, you know, a myriad of other styles of dance, but primarily ballet. I was very serious about it, and had some aspirations of becoming professional, but I ended up going to college right out of high school. But I did get to dance professionally with a small ballet company while I was at McAllister in St. Paul. So
oh, nice.
That was pretty fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then because of all that training, I was able to go to Sri Lanka and study dance there. So
did you? Was there a specific style of dance in Sri Lanka that you were interested in?
Yep. So there are three, I guess you could say, traditional styles of dance in Sri Lanka. And one of them is, I'd say, by far the most prominent and the most visible there, and it's called Kandyan dance. It's upcountry Sri Lankan dance. It used to be viewed as more of like a ritual dance, but it's also been a stage dance and sort of like a royal dance for a long time. And now it's pretty much primarily sort of like a classical stage dance, like a perform. Like
very formal.
Yeah. And it's many of the old rituals that have never, or haven't been performed since the 50s. You know, these things have sort of died out.
Right.
But nonetheless, Kandyan dance is still a huge, huge symbol of Sinhala Buddhist identity. The image of the dancers is on, like, stamps. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's very sort of laden with this national identity, and it's an interesting art form because of that. So,
for me, I studied political science and theory and mm-hmm. government in school, and then also got a degree in English. And then when I got out of school, I went to work for a campaign for the incumbent mayor in Seattle. But I always had an interest in film and photography. It's kind of an opposite thing we've got going here, where you have this art, you know, deep arts background or deep performing arts background.
Right.
And then you moved into, you know, more science and policy
right.
sort of work. And,
yeah.
and then I have this kind of policy, you know, social science background, and then moved into art. And I'm really grateful to have those two things, because the work that I, you know, the skills I have as a writer that were honed in college, and understanding how government works and having engaged in government work, really, I think, gives me skills as working as, you know, a creative person that allow me to do what I do. So I'm mm-hmm. I don't know if you feel like dance has at all giving you some sort of skill or edge or foundation that, like, even informs what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. So going into statistics, it's a fairly recent transition for me, just a couple of years that I've been in that field. But going in, my intention was always, you know, I've got this social science background in anthropology, and that's a field where storytelling is critical. Like, that is a huge part of the field, and I saw that I could bring that into statistical science. And so what we were talking about earlier with the storytelling piece and the data piece, they all fit together really well. And then with the dance, it was a way in Sri Lanka that I was able to connect to people very genuinely. It's something I truly had no idea about. And I had to learn everything about it from the people I was living with and studying with. And I just felt like that was a very genuine connection.
Right.
And so being able to connect with people that way, that's something that I'll take into everything I do.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I think it has certainly influenced what I do now.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about the visual and performing arts.
Yeah.
Is that connection and relationship building. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. Thank you. The MAP Radio Hour is funded in part by the Lift Your Voice Advocacy Fund. Production by Matthew Horton. Theme song and logo by Otto Huditz. I'm Janelle Engelstad. Thanks for listening. And visit the Make Art with Purpose website to connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.